I invite you to just watch this very short clip taken from a movie in preparation for our talk today.
What are you not telling me?
What are you accusing me of?
How do you feel about Sewanee? Never mind, I don't care for him.
I feel disappointment.
That's a lover's word. What about rage? Of all the people that I've looked into since the thing started, the one with the darkest Sewanee history is you. It was his landmines that killed you.
Shh. We don't name the dead. Everyone who loses somebody wants revenge on someone, on God, if they can't find anyone else. But in Africa, in Machobo, the Ku believe that the only way to end grief is to save a life. If someone is murdered, a year of mourning ends with a ritual that we call the drowning mantra. There's an all-night party beside a river. At dawn, the killer is put in a boat, he's taken out on the water, and he's dropped. He's bound so that he can't swim. The family of the dead then has to make a choice. They can let him drown, or they can swim out and save him. The Ku believe that if the family lets the killer drown, they'll have justice but spend the rest of their lives in mourning. But if they save him, if they admit that life isn't always just, that very act can take away their sorrow. Vengeance is a lazy form of grief.
Well, I do have an opening story for you today. And it's about this family. They were farmers, living on a farm, of course. And it were the parents and several children that included two twin boys about the age of 10 years old. And one day, the boys, getting to mischief, as little boys will do, decided it would be fun to push over an outhouse that was out in the field. And so they did so. And then later that evening, the father came storming in and said, "I want to know who pushed over the outhouse." And nobody said a word. And so the father told the story of George Washington cutting down the cherry tree. And when asked by the father, George Washington said, "I cannot tell a lie. I did it." And because of George Washington's honesty, the father forgave his son. So one of the twin boys said, "Okay, we did it." And the father immediately responded by giving them some really harsh punishments. And the other twin said, "Wait, I don't understand. You told us this whole story about how George Washington's father forgave him for cutting down a cherry tree." And the father said, "Yes, but George Washington's father wasn't sitting in a cherry tree when it was cut down." Well, we have a very strange talk title today, Back to the Future. And unless somebody gave you a sneak preview, you probably would never guess that what we are going to talk about today, because what we are going to talk about today is a very old, ancient, spiritual topic. Today, we're going to talk about forgiveness. But before talking about that movie, Back to the Future, that starred Michael J. Fox, I want to talk about another movie. And this is a science fiction story based upon a book written by Ursula Le Guin. And the name of the book is The Lathe of Heaven. And PBS released a movie version of the story a long time ago. I think it goes all the way back to 1980. And for those of you who may be interested, I checked out, and the entire movie is now available on YouTube. And I think it's fascinating, and you may want to check it out if you run out of things to entertain you during our recent shutdown. In the story, the main character, George Orr, dreams. Just like everybody, right? Except that when George dreams, his dreams come true. But his dreams don't come partly true. They come completely true. And not only that, he is the only one in the world who realizes that things are different than they were the day before. So, for example, if he dreamed that there were pink poodles, when he woke up, there would be pink poodles. Also, as far as everyone in the world was concerned, nothing was weird or different. From their standpoint, there had always been pink poodles. Because not only did George dream that there were pink poodles, but his dream also altered the entire evolutionary DNA going back thousands of years, which resulted in pink poodles. Kind of fascinating. I really think so. But what does all this have to do with forgiveness and our talk title, Back to the Future? We have all been told, and we all pretty much buy into the idea that it's impossible to go back in time and change anything. What tis done, and cannot be undone, right? Well, I have to share with you, I don't agree. We all have within us the power to forgive, and through the loving use of that power, we can literally go back in time to the day, to the moment when we have been abused, betrayed, cheated, or hurt in even the most grievous way, and we can forgive. And if we truly forgive, and I mean truly forgive, it is as if whatever has so severely hurt us never occurred. In all of the time lost between when that hurt occurred and now, the present becomes fully restored. It becomes regenerated as part of your regeneration. Just like in the movie The Lathe of Heaven, all of the pieces fall into place and the relationship, which had been so painful, so disturbing, so crippling, now is free to flourish from this moment going forward. Because you now are free to flourish. You and your life has been restored. And you certainly could argue the point. You might say, you know, Reverend Mike, you don't have both oars in the water. You're crazy. If I forgive something that happened, it doesn't change the fact that it happened. Well, actually, of course, I have to agree with that. So we need to delve in just a little bit deeper. When we experience something, anything, there are two things that happen. There is the event itself, the experience. And then there is our reaction to that experience. It's a basic unity principle that we may not be able to control everything that happens to us in life. But we absolutely can control, and actually we can choose how to react to anything that we might experience. And all I am saying is that not only can we make this choice at that moment, but we also could do so anytime that we may want to retroactively. And if we choose to do so, it reduces whatever hurt us to absolutely nothing. It may have happened, but it's as if it never did, because its negative influence on you and on your life has been reduced to zero. When I was probably about 9 years old, there was a major falling out between my mom and one of her brothers. I don't have a clue what took place, what caused it. All I know is that my Uncle John, who used to visit us regularly, stopped coming around. and he lived only about, well, less than a mile away from us. If there was an extended family event, like a wedding, my mother and father refused to talk to him or even go near him after what happened. Again, I had no clue what happened, and talking about it back then was an absolute no-no. Then one day when I was 18 or 19 years old, something very strange happened. There was a knock at the door. My mother opened the door, and my Uncle John stood there. And for a couple of seconds, time just seemed to stop. And then my Uncle John took a couple steps forward, and he gave my mother a hug. And in that moment, whatever it was that had happened years ago, absolutely disintegrated as if it never was. I again asked my mother what exactly did happen years before, and she told me, "Never mind. It doesn't matter. It never happened." I will share with you one more true story. One of my aunts, my mother's sister, gave birth to a baby boy. For reasons known only to God, she didn't want him and refused to take care of him. His name was Jimmy, and his grandmother took him in and raised him as her own. Until I was a teenager, I never realized that Jimmy was a cousin and not an uncle. And one day at a social gathering, my aunt, who had rejected him 30 years earlier, broke down and sobbed, apologizing to him. He reacted by taking hold of her and giving her a hug. He told her it was okay, that he had a really good life and always felt loved. With both of them in tears, he comforted her and assured her everything was okay. After 30 years, he made a choice and found his mother. This concept that I'm suggesting to you today is nothing new. For centuries, Orthodox Christianity has taught and held onto a theology that God had retroactively forgiven the sins of humankind by sending down a Savior. And in Unity, we don't particularly embrace that theology, but on a metaphysical level, it holds a truth. Take a historical perspective. In the Hebrew scriptures, God was mean. God was a punishing God, a God that held a grudge and often reacted with great anger. There are stories after stories about the Israelites and the Jews who had done wrong. And then the writer's take on all of this is that there had to be dire consequences for their behavior. Our way-shower, Jesus, truly did redeem us. He redeemed us by introducing a new loving and forgiving awareness, a new loving and forgiving response to when we do things wrong or don't exactly get things right. In other words, he took that old self-punishing mindset and replaced it with love, understanding, and forgiveness. In the Gospel of John, a woman who was caught in the act of adultery was brought before him. And according to the old way of looking at things, according to strict Jewish law, she was to be stoned to death. And Jesus responds to the situation by saying, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." And one by one, they slowly drifted away. Jesus then says, "Well, there is no one left to condemn you, so neither will I. Go and sin no more." Jesus offers a new way, a new awareness in response to a very old mistake. all of us have heard powerful quotations about how holding a grudge just chews us up inside. It just eats away at us. How many times have you heard somebody say, "I'll never forgive him for that," or, "I'm sorry, but I can never forgive you for that"? Perhaps you have said or thought that yourself at one time or another, and if you did, it's perfectly understandable. I am sure that everyone listening today at one time or another has been frustrated or angered, maybe infuriated, by something someone said or did. And actually, becoming angered is half bad compared to being crushed, devastated, betrayed, or hurt by somebody else, especially if that somebody else is someone who loves you or is supposed to love you, someone like a parent. Letting it go can be so incredibly difficult. Being aware of that, I'm actually a little uneasy to suggest that you have a choice to do so, but you do. And the longer that you choose to hang on to it, the more difficult it becomes to forgive. That's because you just keep shopping around for more reasons, more validations, more excuses to justify where you are, to explain your feeling of martyrdom. And all the while, you're living under this dark cloud. All the while, you slowly become more accustomed to the pain. Your hurt becomes a lifestyle, a way of life. All the while, you slowly grow more self-imprisoned. But being victimized doesn't need to embrace victimhood. How powerful was that one line that Jesus expressed as he was dying? "Father, forgive them." Nelson Mandela said that holding on to your resentment is like drinking your poison and waiting for your enemies to die. He had been thrown into prison on trumped up charges. When he finally was released after many, many years, he shared, "I knew that I had to forgive what happened to me. If I didn't, I knew I would still be imprisoned." Forgiveness is an integral part of every single spiritual path. Growing, becoming more spiritually aware, requires things like understanding and patience and tolerance and joy, and of course, loving. All of these are traits that are part of our spiritual makeup, our spiritual DNA as beloved children of God. The realization and manifestation of these traits all become impeded if we cannot exercise the power of forgiveness. In the Gospel of Matthew, we are told the story that if you are about to bring your gifts to the altar and you remember that you are at odds with somebody, with a brother, go first and reconcile with him, and then come back and make your offering. And when asked by Peter how many times should he forgive someone, 7? Jesus answers, "No, not 7, 70 times 7. In other words, you always, always, always have to be forgiving in nature. Forgiveness is a process, an ongoing learning skill. Like any superpower, it might feel a bit awkward at first when you first start trying it, but it is empowering. Forgiving, refusing to remain angry or hold a grudge for something somebody did to you today, can even help lessen those deep feelings of anger you have towards other people in your life. Again, maybe your parents. And if you start to grow your ability to forgive, you will grow in the joy that you experience in your life. If need be, just start forgiving little things and then amp it up from there. If somebody gets your order wrong, what's the big deal? Let it go. If somebody bumps into you accidentally, or somebody takes that parking space before you do, how easy is it just to smile and let it pass? The Roman Emperor, Marcus Aurelius, now we're going back a couple thousand years here, folks, once said, reject your sense of injury, and the injury itself disappears. I'm not preaching anything new today. Out of the many times and the many people that life presents to us to forgive, the most difficult person in the world to forgive is you. It's absolutely amazing how hard we can be on ourselves and how often we could just repeatedly insist on kicking ourselves in the gut. Guilt seems to be drawn to us like a magnet sometimes, doesn't it? I mean, here I am today giving a sermon on forgiveness, and I still cannot completely let go of feeling bad at a time looking back when I could have been more present, more loving, more understanding to my father at a time when he really, really needed it. And the crazy thing is that I know without a shadow of a doubt that he never was hurt or disappointed. And furthermore, he would want me, for God's sakes, to just let it go. Why is it? What is it about us that makes us take on unnecessary baggage and beat ourselves up? Why does a young child often blame himself or herself if their parents separate and divorce? Why are we so prone to take the blame when there's just no blame to be taken? I don't know the answers to these questions, but I do believe that the more that you forgive, the more forgiving you become, even to yourself. Ultimately, forgiveness is your own personal get out of jail free card. Early on, I stressed that this process of going back to the future would be successful if you really and truly were able to forgive what happened completely. There is work involved, though. In the movie Back to the Future, going back in time involved a really complex journey in a souped-up car, a souped-up DeLorean. And maybe in your own situations, it might involve, I don't know, sending loving, forgiving thoughts and prayers in the direction of the person that did you wrong, that hurt you. What your spiritual car, what your spiritual DeLorean, whatever your spiritual vehicle looks like, you will have to determine that for yourself. All I know is if you want to be happy and grow now, today, you have to stop allowing yourself to be enslaved by yesterday. This is the true redemptive good news of the Gospels. It's about opening our eyes. It's about forgiveness. It's about love. It's about an open invitation to the kingdom. And there's no angel, there's no centurion standing at the gate checking your credentials. You make that journey, you cross into that kingdom. and live in the fullness of life at that point in which you are ready and letting go and forgiving plays a large part in that preparation. My invitation to you today is, pandemic or no pandemic, let's join arm in arm. Be about forgiving. Let's walk into that kingdom together. And now I invite you to join me in prayer and meditation.